CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Russian economy under severe sanctions. I welcome Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution, has been my guide on the deterioration of the Russian economy now and in the indefinite future. Agreed upon is that this is profound damage. I give you an example. Tanks on the battlefield being captured by Ukrainians now are finding that the Russians have cannibalized washing machine microchips in order to keep the war effort, and that the amount of shipping of chips from China has increased more than 200%. They do not have access to the technology that makes a modern state, but more profoundly, what they're witnessing right now is a brain drain not seen ever, at least since the revolution. 250,000 young men, we're told, have left the country voluntarily rather than face the draft or the conscription or other brutalities. Those are well-educated and well-financed young men. Some are walking across the border. Others are flying across the border. And that is the future. That's a profound number. But I go to a number that's been given recently in a Reuters report, and I ask for Michael's help to understand it. Michael, a very good evening to you. Russian banks lost around $25 billion from the Ukraine war. This, according to a Russian bank official. What's he talking about? How did he come up with that number? Because I can make up a number, too. Do you trust this? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening to you. What happens is that the Central Bank of Russia, which is, among other things, like our Fed is a regulator and supervisor of the banking system, published in early September a confidential report on the balance sheet of the banks and the profit and losses of the banks during the first half of 2022. It was not published, it was confidential, but it was leaked to various newspapers, and then the deputy chairman or vice chairman of the central bank made a speech in which he revealed some of these numbers. And the number you are citing, the losses, is from that report, and then it went in the newspaper. So what happened? Actually, the losses were $32 billion. But some banks were profitable, and so there was something like $7 billion in profits for smaller banks. The big banks suffered. I will explain why. And so the net effect is $25 billion in losses from sanctions, especially for major banks. They have about 13 major banks, what we call in this country and everywhere, the systemic banks. So those with assets which constitute altogether the bulk of the assets of the banking system. And those banks suffered a lot because they had exposure to foreign exchange. After the foreign exchange reserves of the central bank and major assets of Russian banks in the West were frozen, they had to close their positions, sell the derivatives, they didn't exercise their options, options expire, all the derivatives they lost. So there are profound losses, banks went bankrupt, and the central bank had to bail them out, and the bailout continues. And major institutions of the banking system are bankrupt. That's what it is.
We see now that Russia is teetering on explaining itself to its people, but also to its trading partners, people around the world. As of December 5th, it'll no longer be able to sell oil to Europe. As of now, there is no natural gas going through the Nord Stream 1 or Nord Stream 2 pipelines. We know this because of the sabotage report, as of yet under investigation. So that leaves Russia to sell its natural gas, its crude oil, and its refined products, if it has any, or crude oil for refined products, to the rest of the world. We raise this issue each week, and we watch Russia finding a workaround. So far, none. Let's start with natural gas. I'm told there's a small pipeline to China, but not profound. No pipeline to India. There is TurkStream, which is a pipeline from Russia into Turkey. That now, of course, is in question because if sabotage struck Nord Stream 1 and 2, it can strike that as well. So has the natural gas income of Russia plunged to numbers we can only guess at, towards zero? Is that what's happened to it?
Natural gas is important. Oil is more important because of all oil and natural gas revenues. About 75% is from oil and 25% is from natural gas. But it is important. And at the moment, they have problems all over the world. They just closed the one of the producers of natural gas and oil in the island of Sakhalin, which supplied for South Korea and Japan. It's closed, not producing anymore. Then the pipeline was this Nord Stream 1. Was closed for technical reasons. Now it's blown up. Both that had two lines, both lines are blown up. And Nord Stream 2, which never went into transmission of natural gas, one of the lines is blown up, one remains, but it is not operative. The one through Ukraine, they have trouble with it now, transmits only about 16 billion cubic meters a year, and they have no money to pay for transit. And so they told the Ukrainians that they should for free transport Russian oil to Europe. The Ukrainians said they will take them to the arbitration court in Europe. And then the Russians threatened to close this pipeline altogether. And then only the Turkish pipeline remains. And so their natural gas supply to the world is being reduced. And the oil too, and and they have very little capacity for liquefied natural gas to produce and to transport. So what remains is oil by tankers all over the world. But again, the capacity is limited because they don't have sufficient tankers. So they have to charter Western vehicles. Western vessels, and those are under sanctions. So they are constrained from all sides.
Refined products. Here's the formula I've been told that is speculated about in Europe. Selling crude oil to China, which is undergoing, and China has extra refining capacity. There's very little extra capacity in Europe. This is to make diesel, the stuff that we use for airplanes and et cetera, important products, vehicles. And there's very little capacity, extra capacity in the U.S. So they sell crude to China. China then refines and sells diesel back to Europe. That's a workaround, Michael. I think it's creative on their parts, but it certainly suggests everyone's desperate. We have about a minute.
Yeah, it's good for everyone because the capacity is low. They have they sell to China under 2 million barrels a day, and they cannot sell more of oil because of the pipeline capacity is limited. But the world needs this diesel, and if the Chinese provide it, this is good for the world economy.
And finally, your thoughts about this deal that was ballyhooed about Russia cutting a deal with the Taliban. The Taliban has no money. Is this Russia's sense of humor? What do you make of this announcement?
Well, the Russians are desperate to sell to anyone. They used to rely on India. Now India says the insurance costs are too high, the transportation costs are too high, and they're buying more from Iraq and Saudi Arabia. And so the Russians are looking for markets, and Taliban is kind of the last resort.
Yes, I would say so. Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution, my guide on the Russian economy as it falls apart like Dorian Gray. I'm John Bashley.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Bachelor.